So nice to have you back, Andrei.
My pleasure.
And let's get started with what's going on. Everybody's talking about the new strategy of Russia in terms of the use of nuclear weapons. What is that about?
Oh, it's very simple. First, it's clarification in terms of the covering Belarus, obviously, fully. Now, Belarus has the same level of defense in terms of nuclear umbrella as Russia. And secondly, of course, it's just pretty much simple statement. We don't care what, where from it flies into Russia, especially if it is theoretically potentially capable of carrying nuclear weapon. Those who launch it will get it, but also those who produced it and transferred it. So in other words, Russians will treat now, for example, Storm Shadow flying not only in the Russian territory proper, but new territories, as has been explained, not only as the attack on Russia, but as the nuclear attack on Russia. And in this case, the first thing will be just, you know, there are many military installations of Great United Kingdom, France, and United States around the world. And as I already stated, they want to do it, sure. Guess what? Some base goes in flames, and Russians will decide if they do it nuclear or conventional way. Simple as that. It was the lowering of that threshold because obviously, as Putin said, and you know, enough is enough, you know, in terms of them hiding behind the backs of this Ukrainian cannon fodder. And yeah, so there you go. So London, hey, that's no problem. So it's simple as that. There's not much to really discuss.
Yeah. And to understand what's going on in the United States right now, Zelensky is talking about more weapons. But what's going on in Ukraine? What's going on in Ogledar, in Pokrovsk, these cities?
Well, I mean, it's collapse of the front. Ogledar is now fully surrounded. They've been banging the order to evacuate Ogledar. But obviously never came. The Russians surrounded it completely. So inside Ogledar, they are about, I don't know, between 40% this morning controlling it. So yeah, it's going to be a slaughter. Same goes with the Krasnoarmeyskiy, because as already stated, operational art 101, until Russia evens the front, turns it into the more or less flat or straight line north-south, they will not go inside Pokrovsk, which is practically empty. There are some civilians who are hiding, waiting for Russian armed forces, but now is the, after Kurakhovo have been taken, you know, basically broke through. Nevelsky cauldron is, yeah, it's absolute mind-boggling what is going on there. And of course, yeah, Kursk, my gosh. There are now two cauldrons, one larger and one inside are being formed. So, yeah, we're looking at just absolute mayhem for Ukrainian armed forces. And basically, yeah, that's how collapse looks like, basically, what can I say? You know? So it's just we are within it and we need to look at the dynamics in the nearest few days. And after that, so as I already stated, there is a lot of happening in Kupiansk area, in Volchansk. Oh my gosh, did you see there? You can take a look what a FAB 3000 does and then follow on with the three FAB 1500. I don't think so anything leaves there after that, you know. So, and we are talking about, pardon me. What can I say? Yeah, it's a mayhem.
Yeah. And we know what's going on the battlefield is related to what's happening right now in the United States. In your opinion, recently we've learned that Pentagon is not in favor of sending long-range missiles to Ukraine. But how about this new strategy, the new type of mindset in terms of the use of nuclear bombs on the part of Russians? It seems that there is still concern about what's going on in the United States in terms of sending long-range missiles to Ukraine.
Yeah, it's simple as that. You send the long-range missiles. There are a number of bases of U.S. bases in Europe. you know, so Mr. Kinzhal can fly in and deal with this, you know, and nobody knows, will it be nuclear or will it be, you know, conventional? So simple as that. I mean, but no, they don't, looks like they really thought it out. There are no JASMs. They gave them JSO, which is nothing but gliding bomb. So Zelensky is evidently really pissed off.
Yeah, but how do you find it right now, Zelensky? Do you think he's still hoping to get more weapons from the United States? It doesn't seem that he would get that much to continue this conflict. And in the Biden administration, it's so amazing when you look at the Biden administration right now. You can say, at the same time, you can say they're willing to continue this conflict. On the other hand, you see some sort of new policies. No, they don't want to continue this conflict. Do you have this different type of feeling coming from the Biden administration?
Yeah, I can only follow with what Larry Wilkerson said to you, you know. Just basically probably Lloyd Austin finally had it with all this, you know. And we know that Biden is, well, he is... Yeah, he is mentally impaired, and he definitely hates Russian gods. I mean, he, you know. But the point is, if he wants to play those games, he's old, you know. He's old. He enjoyed life, you know, in all very weird ways. But the other people, they have their families and everything, you know. They understand where it could lead to. Even Jake Sullivan probably understands that, you know. So, and... what can I say? I definitely would go with Larry Wilkerson, who definitely has his insights and, you know, inroads in the establishment there in Washington, that probably they told them enough is enough. We do not want to die because it's going to end up with a nuclear war and nobody lives after that. So, and this, Russia just does this, you know, kind of kabuki, not kabuki theater, but dance around this to make sure that those people do not commit suicide and take all of us with them. So, and who knows who has now the nuclear codes, you know, the what is called nuclear football. We don't even know who runs it, you know, obviously not Biden. His wife, she is doctor of what? Of be teaching, you know, kindergarten. I mean, that's, yeah, the country is completely ungovernable. And so it is all about the some sections of the Russian, pardon me, American government and, you know, trying to decide who is who and who runs the show.
And do you understand right now what they're trying to do? I'm talking about Ukrainians in the United States. And what would be their main objective? Are they looking for the continuation? Are they understanding that this war is practically at the end, in the final stages, that they want to find a better position in their mind? I don't know, whatever would be in their mind. But how do you see this type of mindset on their part?
Well, they enjoyed the tremendous, Ukraine enjoyed the tremendous control of the U.S. government during Trump administration. Trump was, well, he was impotent. He was one of the most impotent POTUSes, except for, you know, damaging country even more, like, you know, quitting all kinds of the arms treaties and breaking the practically the diplomatic relations with Russia and being proud of it. And, of course, he was surrounded by the neocons and controlled by all kinds of the Ukrainian operatives, such as Alexander Vindman, you know, famous guy who was leaking openly, you know, the secret content of Mr. Trump negotiations with whatever the counterparts there. That tells you everything you need to know, pretty much. And he did nothing. I mean, he was impotent. He was kicked like a puppy, you know, basically. So, and yeah, it continues to have a great influence on the, and they hope that Kamala Harris or other people who, you know, control her will come or stay in power, and that will somehow give them some kind of the chance on whatever they think they can get out of it. Most of them, they want to, you know, how to put it politely, enrich themselves more and then run, you know? So, that's pretty much wet dream. And what Mr. Johnson today stated, which was funny, you know, I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. When he demanded to kick out this wonderful Makarova, Ukrainian ambassador to the United States, and he demanded Zelensky to, you know, throw her out. Why didn't he go to State Department? They are the only ones who can actually basically declare her status as the persona non grata. But the problem is, of course, State Department is the main enabler of Ukraine. You know, Mr. Blinken, who is the heir to this, you know, nut job, Victoria Nuland, and her neocon cabal. So Mr. Johnson should rethink seriously that he should look inside himself and around him. And Foggy Bottom is not far from, you know, the Capitol building. So he can walk there, you know, if it comes down. Or he has limo, I'm pretty sure. Let him drive there and let him declare that. United States policies, foreign policy, apart from being run by AIPAC, you know, the AIPAC and Zionist lobby has the practically, with some exceptions like Thomas Massie, of course, you know, the guy who has balls, real balls. The rest of the Congress are primarily covered. It's run either by, Zionists or by Ukrainians. That's the United States is politically is the third world nation. It's, you know, corrupt utterly, and so why they, you know, worry about it. But at this stage, it's not even Ukraine. It's the reality that money and resources simply ran out, period. There's nothing to provide it with, you know. So, man, we have this result.
So amazing, Andre, hearing Donald Trump talking about, today he was talking about Iran. He has information that Iran, these two attempted assassination, that they were trying to assassinate him. He says that Iran may be Iran, and maybe Iran is behind this type of assassinations. What's so amazing, Andre, because if you remember last week, he was talking about, we have to consider Iran because it's getting out of our hand. We have to have a better relationship with Iran. And right now he's talking about Iran behind assassination, and let's bomb the largest city of Iran to make them understand what's going on. Andre, what I'm talking about is this, what Putin pointed out is the predictability. That you have to understand what your counterpart, your enemy, whoever you're thinking of, you have to understand their behavior. It doesn't seem that Trump would be that sort of figure if he wins 2024. I don't see he's doing anything in terms of what's going on in Ukraine or even with Iran or China. He's going to get even worse with Iran and China while having the conflict with Russia in Ukraine.
No, absolutely. And again, as I already stated, there's nothing which can save actually United States today. I mean, it's just a matter of how fast it will continue to decline until it reaches the end of the rope, which is, of course, the last real big nail in the coffin will be Kazan in October, the BRICS meeting. But Trump is, as I already stated, I probably will go and vote for him anyway, you know. So because, how to put it, I don't want, the country to turn into complete, you know, mayhem if Harris, or rather whoever stands behind Harris, wins. But the point is, yeah, he's a blowhard. He loves to talk, narcissist. You know, everybody knows that. And it's not me. Listen to what Tucker Carlson talks about him. He calls him openly a narcissist. The guy is just absolutely concentrated on himself. I mean, he has practically no real statesmanship experience. He may have learned some lessons, but he still believes in this. Well, yeah, he comes with this BS, like, I'm going to call immediately, you know, Putin, and Zelensky will stop the war. He doesn't even understand the position of the United States anymore, let alone himself, because he is in many respects like a butt of the jokes in Russia, for example, you know. So, and while Putin was joking about Kamala Harris, I don't think so Trump understands that he is an amateur compared to Putin and his team. And so he may talk whatever he wants. In other matter that what could happen, first, nothing going to change, obviously. Nothing going to change in terms of Iran because, well, Trump is basically captured by the Israeli lobby. He is he was one of the most Zionist-driven people in United States politicum. And so Adelson, you know, while he was alive, and then, of course, his widow, he basically the creature of them. So who knows? I mean, but no, it's not going to get better. And of course, the last thing he will be able to do will to stop the so as he thinks that he can stop the war, because if you listen today what Putin and Lavrov say, that the only language United States understands is the language of power, of force, period. And he is absolutely correct. So in this case, yeah, well, the MAGA crowd, I understand. And again, as I already stated, I will go and vote for him. I mean, because voting for the other side is just basically condemning the country to a complete decomposition and dissolution, probably extremely violent forms. So, and that's what we have. So, yeah, Russians will deal with Ukraine completely on their own without any Trump's input.
I think when you look at what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on in the Middle East against China, you may have this conclusion that Putin and Lavrov are talking about. It's totally right. It's 100% right, because you look at what's going on right now between Hezbollah and Israel. The same thing, Andre. If they see you as less powerful, they're going to attack you. And if you try to talk with them, they don't understand that you are trying to negotiate with them, as Russia did during this conflict. They have tried so many times to negotiate with the West, but at the same time, they're trying that Russia is weakening. Russia is weak. That's why they're trying to negotiate with us. We are getting to the point that in Russia, they're trying to say enough is enough. We're not going to. And the negotiation, they're not willing to negotiate with Zelensky and his administration. Maybe someone in the United States in the future, that whenever Russia feels comfortable to negotiate.
Quoting Lavrov from a day ago, the main objective is to annihilation of the Zelensky regime. I mean, cannot get any. The problem is when you talk about, again, as I already stated, Western or Israeli, you know, whatever, you know, now this is United States is just basically extension of Israeli foreign policy. I mean, United States is run by AIPAC today in terms of foreign policy and to a certain degree by domestic policies, is that they are uncultured people. I mean, they do not have class. None of them does. I mean, they are really uncultured. They are very badly read. They are run through these degree mills in Ivy League, which provides no education whatsoever. I'm talking about primarily humanities. That are not to be mistaken that there's some STEM schools or medical schools are still great, you know, remain, you know, competitive, let's put it this way. I'm talking about this, all this Georgetown garbage, you know, with that national security status, all this, you know, foreign service diplomacy. So, I mean, it's all garbage. So, and they are uncultured people. If you look at them, they are very ignorant. And this is the result of the complete degeneration of the Western education. Look at the products of Oxford, for example. Starting from Boris Johnson to Liz Truss to, you know what, this Starmer guy and whatever the hell. These are morons, literally imbeciles, you know. So, and when you think so that Boris Johnson with degree in classics, obviously he didn't study really well. He probably was mostly drunk and taking drugs most of the time. They do not understand the first thing about the world outside. They don't understand foreign cultures. They don't understand cultures which are older than them. They don't understand military and economic balance. Zero. So you have the guys who know, again, as I already stated, their main occupation, their main specialty is how to stay elected. That is why, for example, Thomas Massey, of whom I spoke, who has actual engineering background and is not afraid of anybody, when he was speaking to some of the Biden administration's guys, and he says, what kind of education you have? I have a degree in political science. He said, it's not a science. Okay, so neither is, you know, they who believes now their, you know, opinion polls or sociology, quote unquote, which is completely what, garbage in, garbage out. So it all serves certain political purpose, a certain political agenda. And as a result, you have nincompoops. They literally don't understand. They still think, because they are morons, they were taught on Solzhenitsyn and all this garbage, which this dissident fifth column of Russia fed them, because they want it, because they're narcissists. They need to be constantly, their egos, you know, pumped up. So they believe that Russia is still in the 90s. So, and when you look at that, what can I say? It's a dead end. Yeah, it's essentially they ran themselves into the ground, and it's too late for them now.
Yeah, we've learned that the Ukrainian army has lost 4 F-16s in an unexpected strike that has happened. And how many, before that we had 1 F-16, and right now 4, it's going to be 5. And how about how many F-16 they have received so far? Do we know about that?
Nobody knows the exact number. They said it was 6, but there is also the rumor has it that France delivered some Mirages 2000 or whatever. There, it's pretty old plane, you know. So it doesn't matter. I mean, you cannot explain to people who never studied anything of value in their life, you know, that it doesn't matter. It's 21st century warfare with the air defense, which is the best in the world by a mile. And they think that they can fly in the old F-16s and fight Su-35 or Su-57. It's just, it's completely suicidal. It was done for PR primarily. And hey, $170,000 for equivalent, in Russian it's 15 million rubles. It's you know, it's a good monetary reward. I'm sure there are some Russian pilots and air defense guys fought over who will be claiming those rewards. So yeah, I mean, what can I say? It's a circus, really. It's like the guys who are stuck in 90s, as I already stated, the practically whole TOE of the U.S. Army. I'm not even talking about those Chihuahuas. Their TOE, their operational concepts are from 90s against some third world, you know, impotence. That's pretty much what it is. And then suddenly they face the army, which using its completely not much of its potential, sits there and annihilates. We're probably talking about it. It's a horrendous number, of course. It's probably more than a million KIAs on the Ukrainian side.
Andre, they're talking about 124,000 soldiers being trained by the United States and NATO. It's something new and they're just getting trained right now, or it's something before they're talking about the past?
I don't know which soldiers they're training. NATO soldiers?
NATO.
It's all, do something attitudes to show that, oh yeah, we're gonna train them, you know, like to something new things. First, they don't have any tactical experience, because whatever they experience there is their primarily their being under constant fire impact from Russian long range fires. So the only thing the experience they have is how to sit in bunkers and how to shoot in the backs of the retreating, Ukrainian troops. They play games with the electronic warfare. They obviously tried to pretend that Patriot Pact 3 is a good air defense complex. Most, all of them practically, I believe there are only one, two left. I mean, have been, annihilated. So we heard this story before, you know. So now Abrams and Leopard tanks are coming. They will, well, we know what it all happened. So what they do, they, you know, they emulate motions, you know, that we can teach them something and something. Sure, go right ahead. I mean, the problem is, their tactical experience is one thing. Operational experience, we already saw what operational planning and operational conceptualizing on the part of the Pentagon, and especially those clowns from London, it's pathetic. I mean, this is like amateurs decided to, you know, amateurs in chess decided to play Grossmeister. It's like, are you kidding? So, and what you have now is this reaction. They pretend that they do something which is kind of, you know, Russians necessarily will have to attack NATO. Why? I mean, it's, so, yeah, that's what they do, PR primarily.
Yeah. And the training from Sersky that we've learned before, it's something like 3 weeks. And in 3 weeks, they want to prepare them for the battlefield, for the level of fighting that's going on right now. It's unbelievable. Because even NATO forces, they don't have any sort of experience of what's going on between Russia and Ukrainians. And how do they prepare these people? Are they prepared them to be killed?
Yeah, primarily. So you have to understand that Sersky is a butcher, basically. And one of the reasons why he is a butcher, he graduated a famous what is called Kremlin Cadets military academy. He even marched on one of the parades in the Red Square during the 7th November, you know, the October Revolution, you know, great celebrations. After that, obviously, he went to serve. He stayed with the Ukrainian army. And guess what? I spoke about it in my video. The guy was the biggest honcho responsible for bringing Ukrainian armed forces to the NATO standards. In other words, he had been subjected himself to this NATO doctrines and operational planning, and that completely killed him the remnants of the military competence. The only thing he knows how to do is how to influence policymakers and media. And for that, he have to kill many more soldiers. Put any American general there, he will do the same thing. They don't know how to fight otherwise. And especially when they don't have any physical or even moral advantage, which they usually enjoy, you know, winning Grenada, you know, Grenada, great victory, you know, historically something incomprehensible. I'm being facetious, of course. So, yeah, again, it's like the, you know, the mask have been torn down, or it's, you know, emperor's new clothes, that the emperor is naked. And yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, let's talk. If they want to talk operations, that will be funny. Most of those people who, American generals, they don't even have mathematical apparatus to understand what they are dealing with. Because many of them have the humanities degrees behind them, and they go into their things and, oh yeah, we're going to do this and that. Show me when they were successful in doing this. And they basically lost to the ragtag militias, essentially. So, and this is just one of the part of the reason, because, and so then Sersky is butcher. I mean, judging by his face and all that, he probably is heavy drinker. He is not completely stupid, I think. He has some background left, I guess, from the Soviet times. He understands what is happening on the front. And, you know, how can you help it? You can't. So, and yeah, there are political games in Kiev, so, which of course being controlled also from London in Washington. And so you have this constant, you know, supply. Well, it's not constant. Now it's dwindling, you know, so the supply of the fresh cannon fodder into this Russian meat grinder. And Russians are very content with this, you know. Yes, I'm not kidding. I'm quoting my very good friend who, you know, has very good connections in the, you know, level of the general staff and things like that. Because Russians are pissed off. You know why they pissed off? Because actually, and I'm not kidding, because they constantly have to abandon their fabricated positions. The moment they get in, the moment they get, you know, dig in, they have to move ahead again, you know, because obviously it is this, the what is called the firewall or wall of fire, which completely sweeps those remnants of the Ukrainian armed forces. And Russians are actually, by their whole circumstances, are forced to move with this wall of fire, thus constantly having to erect new positions. You know, Russians are not in a rush to capture everything and things like that, because this is only for the, you know, fanboys of General Patton. Reality and political reality, geopolitical reality of the theater of operation is such that Russia is very content with doing what it's doing. It's basically, and I'm sorry to say this, it is, of course, human tragedy. It's basically demographic wiping out any possible future generation of people who may threaten Russia. It's simple as that. They say it's cynical. It is. I mean, I'm sorry. War is a horrible business. War is an abhorrent event of what Leo Tolstoy wrote in War and Peace. The event happened, which is contradictory to human nature and human consciousness. You know, that's war. Except for, of course, those amateurs from Washington, you know, they never saw anything like that. They don't even understand what war is. And so there you go. We have the situation, as I already stated. The numbers, that's why Thomas Massie demanded from the United States government the actual numbers of Ukraine casualties, because he insists that it is a cover-up. It is a cover-up. Anybody who has any brains left know that the number of the KIAs alone exceeds 1 million by now, give and take. So we have now the, what, 1 million plus of maimed, physically and mentally completely destroyed people in Ukraine. We have the country which went from 52 million. It's probably, by different estimates, 19 to 22 million people. It is a complete destruction of the state of Ukraine. But again, state of Ukraine wanted it. They wanted to basically defeat Russia. And there you go. That's the consequences.
Andrei, do you see any sort of difference between Sersky and Zaluzhny? Zaluzhny, after the incursion, the Kursk incursion, he said that he was, before that, they were talking about this incursion, that he was against that type of policy. And with Sersky, they could do that. But at the end of the day, because we know what's going on the battlefield, should be reported to Zelensky and his administration. Do you think that the reporting, honestly, to Zelensky and what's going on, does Zelensky really know what's going on the battlefield, or he's getting just false reports from Sersky?
Well, during Zaluzhny, what difference does it make? It is one nincompoop instead of another. Zaluzhny was a huge integral part of the suicidal so-called counteroffensive. He had no problems of killing 160,000 of his own troops. They are butchers. They are butchers, and actually Zaluzhny altogether went through the also Western type of education and purely Ukrainian education. So what difference does it make? And it makes no difference whatsoever if they report Zelensky real numbers. It makes no difference, because in the end, Zelensky is a puppet. He is high on drugs constantly, and he has the London and the Washington hands up his butt, and he will do what he is told to do. He may, you know, have some wiggling space, so to speak, for maneuver here and there. He can try to play people off. But in the end, it is Mr. Biden or whoever runs Biden or his avatar, whatever he is now, tells him, you know what, stop it. That is why Russians say there's nothing to talk about with Zelensky. What difference does it make? The talk is between Moscow and Washington, period. All those European chihuahuas, absolutely inconsequential. They are nobodies. And the only communications which can happen, and again, that's not going to be negotiations. That will be Russia dictating the terms of the surrender, period. Because the United States in no position, militarily, economically, psychologically, morally, to demand anything. They ran themselves into this dead end. And I was warning about it for practically 10 years. Guess what? They achieved exactly what I was warning against. So what can I say? Well, good for them, I guess, right? They now have, well, they don't learn anyway. They are incapable of learning. They're brainwashed people. So.
Yeah. Andrei, did you watch the interview of General Ben Hodges with Colonel Daniel Davis?
Oh, good God, that is... And, yeah, I saw some... I'm not taking those people seriously anymore. I don't watch anything by Petraeus, Keane, you know, all those, Kellogg. You know, these people are nincompoops. I mean, how the hell they have become generals is just complete mystery to me. But yeah, I know what he was talking about. It's Ben Hodges. What do you expect?
Because they were all over the media when this conflict started, and they were the ones responsible to inject this type of mindset to the Western hemisphere, to the Western countries, that Ukraine is capable of winning the conflict. We cannot just ignore the role of this in this conflict in Ukraine, because they, at the end of the day, they're responsible for what they have been saying and what they have been expressing in terms of what's going on between Russia and Ukraine. And he said he still believes that Ukraine has a chance to win the conflict. And today I talked with Colonel Daniel Davis. He sees the way that he sees General Ben Hodges. He sees that he's telling what he's thinking of, which is totally disconnected with the reality.
I wrote about so much. And you know, my friends and people, of course, who I keep in esteem, some in higher, some low, but in esteem as the military thinker. Daniel Davis is one of them, obviously. He is a realist guy, and he definitely learned his history primarily, you know, not to speak about his experience with the armed forces. Same goes for Douglas MacGregor. We might have irreconcilable differences on the issue of the Cold War 1.0 and his views on World War II, which is completely unacceptable. They are, well, German propaganda. But I do give him a wide berth as the one of the foremost American military thinkers. But if you look at the crop of American generals in the last 20 years, it's a joke. I mean, for crying out loud. No, I mean it. Ben Hodges wouldn't be allowed to command freaking regiment in Russian armed forces. The guy's absolutely like, the same goes for Petraeus, you know, and you look at that, this is just complete. First, it's an unbecoming in some sense. But secondly, yeah, they are responsible. They were the guys together with the corporate media who were injecting this, cavalier attitudes about that, you know, because they don't know anything about Russia. They never studied real warfare. What did they study in their West Point about how Patton single-handedly defeated Germans? They don't even know the basic, you know, operations, each of the operations on the Eastern Front, which dwarfs anything that United States ever fought. And they never studied that. They never studied anything in terms of the serious operational research, because the even West Point, it used to be decent engineering school, but it's just merely 4 years, 5 days a week. They wanted to turn it into the three-year institution because the academic standards were falling precipitously starting from 1990s already. So, and when you look at these people, you kind of, most of them don't have real engineering background. They go and major in some kind of crap like sociology or political science. And what do you expect from them? They heard everything they wanted to hear about how great they are. They will continue to lose wars, but they still will identify themselves as the, you know, the finest fighting force in history. You know, that Mr. Obama, 2008. Mr. Manstein or Mr. Zhukov probably started to spin in their graves, you know, not to speak about the Roman, legion leaders and people of this nature. And yet, here we are. Napoleon would be like, really? So that's the kind of people we have. They're ignoramuses, and as I already stated, that General Lateef, I quote him, almost everything, what American public and political circles know about the war, they know from the entertainment industry. And we have the situation, when you read attentively what is happening now in the service academies, it's horrendous in the United, including like U.S. Air Force Academy, you know. And then you have ROTC. ROTC is not a path to the officerdom of to being a real cadre officer. Not anymore. It used to produce to, you know, people who were competent and could compete. Not anymore. The war today is so complex. You cannot get into it without serious engineering background, military engineering background. And then, so what do you expect? So they go in, they read those fairy tales about how United States defeated Hitler with, you know, those little Russians, you know, somewhere doing their thing. And then you lose the wars and you're still being proclaimed the greatest fighting force. It's a cognitive dissonance of the unprecedented level. I mean, I never saw anything like this.
Andre, how did you find the leaders at the UN? Because whenever we have these type of talks on their part, you would expect that we have some sort of communications, new communications, that they're going to get. They talk about their differences, they put inside their differences to make some sort of compromise and cooperation, but you don't see anything coming out of the UN. And why is that the case when it comes to the UN, and why we are not capable of any sort of communication? We have a war in Ukraine that is so dangerous right now. It can get nuclear the way that they're trying to escalate the conflict. We have with China, we had in the Middle East, but at the end of the day, it doesn't seem that this communication at the UN would help to make a solution, to make some sort of compromise between these parties.
UN is utterly corrupt organization. It's nothing more than the platform to shake the air. It's good for media, it's good for conveying your point of view to a certain degree, but it has been corrupted. It has been corrupted by primarily the West, and including its committees and things like that. It's absolutely useless organization. And I'm on record for many years. It has to be disbanded. The world is officially now split in two. Obviously, they're basically shrinking and declining West, and it's declining. I mean, I do not use this term lightly. And the rest of the world, pretty much, you know. I mean, there is some degree of people who are sitting on the fence, if you wish. But Global South is evolving into the, yeah, serious geopolitical entity. And that is why what is going to happen in October in Kazan is so important. There's nothing to talk about with the West, as I already stated. You cannot talk with Europeans. They mean nothing. They are nobodies, okay? Look at Germany. Look at, you know. So you can talk only to Washington as the, you know, leader. You know, it's not just self-proclaimed. They are leaders of the whatever is left of the West. And that's it. But you don't need United Nations for that. You need a very serious back channels where professionals, not all those, you know, representatives, but where serious diplomats and serious military and special, you know, intelligence services communicate with each other. That's enough, you know. Why do you need United Nations? Fact is, in order to properly split the world and negotiate some rules, it doesn't matter. West is disintegrating, and it will disintegrate in the short to medium run, you know, one way or another. But even to negotiate those rules, so to speak, that here is what is yours is yours, what's mine is mine. And so in this case, Moscow and Washington have to establish those back channels, and the rest of it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. Germany doesn't matter. London doesn't matter. Paris doesn't matter. Nobody matters in Europe. They are nobodies again. They are objects to be, you know, they are being sacrificed. So, and people say, oh, you're harsh on Europe. No, I'm not harsh. I am actually very soft on Europe, because what happened in Europe is the suicide of the civilization. Obviously, United States partially drove it, but let me tell you, majority of Europeans were content with that. Until recently, relatively recently. So, and they just didn't know that they were, you know, sacrificial lambs. You know, lambs, you know, even sacrificial lambs have a very good living until, of course, they're brought to the altar to be sacrificed. Then suddenly things change. But the point is that that's exactly what is happening. And in this particular respect, what can I say? It's between Russia, between Moscow and Washington, and of course then also China having input. And then we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen in October, which is coming in Kazan. That's going to be huge. We know that's going to be huge. Vladimir Putin already stated it so much today. Oh, yesterday, rather.
And what's so difficult to understand on the part of Russia, China, or Iran, or other countries who are dealing with the United States is that Macron recently, just last week, he was talking about that in the aftermath of this conflict in Ukraine, we have to have our relationship with Russia. But as today, earlier, I talked with Richard Wolff and Michael Hodson. Richard Wolff pointed out that Macron, every minute he's changing his mind toward Russia and toward this conflict. When this conflict started, he was in favor of negotiations. During this conflict, even he went to that extent to sending French troops to help Ukrainians. And right now he's talking about, you know, there is no consistency on their part. You don't understand what they're thinking of. Even with the Biden administration, one day they're talking about, we are not going to send this ammunition, cluster bomb. The other day they're going to send. It's unbelievable the level of, because they don't see any sort of rigid, solid policies to deal with.
Well, they cannot develop them to start with because they don't understand how to run the serious nation state. Macron is the teller boy with the very confusing issues of whatever you can call it, you know, but he's nobody. So, yeah, he's political operative. He's a Rothschild, creature. Oh, yeah, he's Rothschild, yeah. So he will change anything. Those people, again, they don't have principles. They don't have honor. They don't have integrity. Plus, Ed here, again, being extremely uncultured. And there you go. So Macron also is irrelevant, as is France. Remove France's nuclear deterrent, which are the four now, I believe, triumphant class strategic missile submarines. They are irrelevant, except for the Airbus, primarily, and some shipbuilding, you know, in Saint-Nazaire and things like that. The rest of it, yeah, who the hell they are? You know, so look at the economic indices. This is like just middle of the road, you know, second tempo at best countries. So, which have absolutely no real impact. And that's what Lavrov stated. You cannot talk to the West basically anymore. They understand only force, or otherwise they don't understand only pain. Or as Mr. Al Capone used to say that, you know what, with a kind word and a gun, you can get much further than with the kind word alone, you know, and it's absolutely true. These people are, well, essentially gangsters, essentially, you know, just with some credentials. That's pretty much it. As I already stated, very uncultured.
Yeah. Andre, the new polls in Germany shows that majority of the population in Germany is against the conflict in Ukraine. And they're thinking that Olaf Scholz is failing because of the conflict, because of the support that goes from Germany to Ukraine. Here comes the question. During this conflict, they haven't seen that much people in, so many people in favor of putting an end to the conflict in Ukraine, in Germany, because German people, we were from the polls that we've learned during this conflict, that we thought that German, most majority of people are in favor of Ukraine. But right now it seems that that's changing in Germany. The rise of AfD and all these parties, yeah. But how would that be translated in the political system of Germany? Germany, Andre, is so important in the heart of the European Union, even with their economy being that weak right now as we are witnessing it. But at the end of the day, we know they're the engine of the European economy.
Well, that tells you something about European economy, doesn't it? So, which is absolutely not what has been actually presented. China eats Europe alive, and she will eat Europe alive. Much of Europe products being, not all, but very many being overpriced and, you know, prestige type. So, but the point is, so yeah, the AfD won in Thuringia, which is traditional, former GDR. In Brandenburg, they still didn't win, still they voted. We can sit here and discuss whatever the combinations and the packaging of the Germany's political parties, but in the end, even in Brandenburg, the SDP, Scholz party still won. They say, oh yeah, they ran without him. Sure, but the point is, these are their policies. They, all those people from, Christian Democrat Union and or those lefty parties, they are all the same. It's just a matter of how one is more adherent to the globalism. I mean, so now when Germans kind of started to wake up, I'm sorry. Too late, guys. Too little, too late. And still you cannot even remove those parties from power. Yeah, the single win in Thuringia, well, big deal. There are many more lands where you have federal lands in Germany where you have to win to really have a real political force of the on the federal level. But guess what? Probably Scholz will end up still winning, So, and too late for Germany. And the point is, the fact of Germany being in the list of the unfriendly countries to Russia, and Russia opening the doors for immigration. And guess what? The largest contingent of the immigrants with the traditional Christian, normal European values, who are going to Russia, guess what? Germans. And we're talking about German Germans, not Russian Germans who during collapse of the Soviet Union immigrated to Germany and now returning back as, Russian citizens, essentially, because most of them have this Russian citizenship. No, we're talking about German Germans from those classic, West German lands who are now flocked to Russia. Zakharova. I'm quoting Zakharova, Maria Zakharova, that the tens of thousands of applications. Now it's going to be even more. You can go on YouTube and look at those German families. I mean, my gosh. So there you go. That's pretty much explains to you what is going on. And those, I understand there are some people who are not necessarily, don't have the bad will towards Russians. But read my lips. Majority of Germany. How large? I don't know. 60, 65%. They don't like Russians. They don't like Russia. They never recovered from defeat. And because of that, the Russophobia is essentially endemic in Germany. So there you go. So why should Russia care about those people? She opened the door for those people who are acceptable Russian, which are essentially classic European Christian values. And Germans are more than welcome. Russia opens her arms to these Germans. But the majority of German population, they really don't like Russians. They never recovered from this trauma. And that is why the United States manipulated those people into what they have become today. Well, it's their choice. What can I say?
Yeah. There are two articles, Andrei, one in Bloomberg and the other one in Financial Times. Both of them are pointing out that the ties between Russia, China, and Iran is getting stronger. And that would hugely, that can be of concern for European Union and the United States. The question is right now, the way that trying to sanction Russia and Iran are the most sanctioned. The United States put tremendous sanctions on these two countries. And I would argue that China would be, if Trump wins, would be the third country to join the club of the most sanctioned countries on earth. But what do they expect from this type of behavior? When you don't talk with them, you don't negotiate with them, you put tremendous sanction on them, you want to destroy them militarily and economically. And at the end of the day, you say, why they're getting together? What?
They want it. They offered it in United Nations. And as Kremlin responded, it's not the time. There's nothing to talk about with UK, France, and United States and Germany. There's nothing to talk about. It's simple as that. These people do not understand what they have done. They don't. They begin to sense. They committed a crime against humanity, essentially, okay? Because this is the Ukraine right now. the largest war after World War II in Europe. Europe must essentially it must die for what it committed against people of, including people of Ukraine. United States committed this, and so they now support Nazi regime. It is Nazi regime. There's no denial of that. So, but you cannot explain it to some journal from United States who sold his soul, family, and any remnants of his consciousness to whatever the devil, you know. So they will sell themselves for to whatever, the highest bidder. So you cannot explain it to them. Those people do not have this moral organ, which comes with their upbringing and their honest attitude towards life, which comes down to our classic, you know, family values, you know, and what in United States for some reason is blanket, you know, just described as conservative values. United States doesn't really have conservative party, really. Republicans are not conservative party. Plus, they are, well, much of it is Zionist party. But the point is that, yeah, they don't have it. None of them have been brought up being a normal people, because eventually they degenerated to what they are. And the prostitutes and political leaders, as you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene stated, I quote her, she is congresswoman, no less. She said, if anybody told you that, you know, average U.S. congressman will sell his family and children for the nice dinner, she said, it's much worse than that. Yeah, we know that. Everybody knows it. They say they still think that they can brainwash American people still, you know, but the rest of the world sees it for what it is, for the most part.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Andre, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
As always.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.